Hi, it's Ruth returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, December 10th. We begin with some of the funeral announcements that appear in the paper today. Billy J. Bill Brehm, B-R-E-H-M, 71, of Decatur, went home to be with the Lord December 8th at Decatur Memorial Hospital, surrounded by his family. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, December 11th, that's tomorrow, at Riverside Baptist Church. Visitation will be held this afternoon from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, December 10th, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur, with military rites. Memorials may be made to Riverside Baptist Church or to Oasis Day Center. Gail Taylor, 71, of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, December 8th, in St. Mary's Hospital. Honoring Gail's wishes, cremation will take place at Graceland Fairlawn Cremation Center. There will be no public services. H. Shirlene Richardson, 83, of Decatur, died on Sunday, December 6th. A mass of Christian burial took place this morning, Thursday, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, and visitation was on Wednesday. Burial will take place in Boiling Springs Cemetery. All arrangements are being handled by Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Memorial gifts in Shirlene's name may be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, the Holy Family Catholic Church, or Catholic Radio WDCR. Recent deaths in Macon County and Decatur include Versy L. Barbie of Decatur, Billy J. Brehm of Decatur, whose arrangements we just heard about, Carol Marie Curtis of Decatur, Rudy Escobar of Decatur, John David Gifford of Decatur, Aaron Hodges of Forsyth, Richard E. Huckaba, Sr., Decatur, Gladys M. Long of Decatur, Gary Lee Miller of Decatur, H. Shirlene Richardson of Decatur, as we heard about, and Gail Taylor of Decatur. Also, David from Central Illinois, David Lauren Bartholomew of Arthur, Alexandria Elizabeth Clark of Mansfield, and Mary Dorothy Franklin of Charleston. We turn now to the opinions page and pick up the editorial today, written by the staff editors of the Decatur Herald and Review. Number of governments build tax burden. The list of local governmental bodies increasing property taxes this year is a long one. The city of Decatur is contemplating a huge 14.6% increase in addition to other tax increases. Macon County has already approved an increase of more than 11%. The Decatur Park District, various school districts, and other villages and townships are also contemplating or have approved property tax increases. These governments all face the same basic issues. Revenue from taxes has declined as the population and the value of property has declined. At the same time, expenses have gone up, and some are facing fairly large state-mandated increases in employee pensions or other unfunded mandates. Many government leaders feel they have cut as deep as they can without affecting the services provided. That's a debatable point, but that's the way they feel. But not one of these governmental bodies or their leaders is exploring any different or innovative way to deliver government services. It is well documented that the state of Illinois has more governmental bodies than any other state by a far margin. That issue hits home in Macon County. Macon County taxpayers can view their property tax bill on the Macon County government website. It's an interesting exercise. The bills vary based on where land is located, but most residents pay taxes to between 10 and 13 different governmental units. A typical property owner in Decatur, for example, is paying taxes to these entities: the City of Decatur, Macon County Health and Mental Health, Macon County Conservation District, Decatur Township, the Cooperative Extension Service, Macon County, Decatur Park District, Decatur Sanitary District, Decatur School District, Mosquito Abatement District, and Richland Community College. Whew. Is it any wonder that Illinois property taxes are among the highest in the nation and that Macon County property taxes are among the highest in the region? What makes the system so infuriating and expensive is that each of these governmental units operates independently. There are rare exceptions when the units may work together on a project, but for the most part, each operates as its own fiefdom. There is significant overlap in services in the areas of public safety, roads and streets, infrastructure, management, and administration. We've talked often about how township government is no longer necessary. But do we also need separate conservation, health, extension service, sanitary, and mosquito abatement districts? How many taxpayer dollars could be saved through consolidation or meaningful collaboration? We may never know the answers to those questions because, to our knowledge, not one elected or appointed official is interested in pursuing the issue. Instead, these government fiefdoms continue asking fewer taxpayers for more of their hard-earned dollars. We turn now to the people's opinion as expressed by Ron Adams of Decatur in his letter to the editor, which carries the headline, "Economist Advances His Ideas for a Fair Tax Plan." Nobel laureate economist Joseph E. Stiglitz has written a 27-page white paper for the Roosevelt Institute laying out a tax reform plan to hold corporations accountable, create jobs, and boost the economy. According to Stiglitz, those in the top 1% pay a much lower tax rate as a percentage of income than someone who works hard for a living but earns lower wages. They not only pay a lower tax rate, but many of them keep most of their income in the form of unrealized capital gains, gains that aren't taxed as long as they keep them, and can even be passed on to their heirs untaxed. It's even a better deal for corporations whose capital gains are made overseas. As long as they don't bring these gains home, they remain untaxed. This means that they have an incentive to keep their money abroad and create jobs abroad. They can then take the goods that are produced abroad with this tax-free money and bring them back to the United States, basically making it unfair competition with the goods produced by Americans. Meanwhile, there are 20 million people in the U.S. working part-time who are looking for full-time work and can't find it. If they had full-time jobs paying a living wage, they'd be spending that money just trying to get by. This would create more jobs, and they'd be paying taxes. They wouldn't have the opportunity to hide their money in the Cayman Islands or in other tax avoidance schemes. They wouldn't have the money to buy the political power needed to change the tax laws in their favor. A search for Joseph E. Stiglitz, and that's Stiglitz, calls for fair taxes for all at billmoyers.com will get you this information. Here's an article from Springfield. It's an AP Wire story. Madigan supports increasing income tax. House Speaker Michael Madigan said Wednesday that a good place to begin in mending a multi-billion dollar spending hole would be to return the state income tax to 5%, its level during a temporary hike that expired in January with then-Governor-elect Bruce Rauner's blessing. Although Madigan has made no secret of his support for higher taxes during the months-long fiscal standoff, his response to an audience question after a luncheon speech to a packed City Club of Chicago gathering represented his first mention of a specific number. "Let me avoid creating a headline for tomorrow's newspaper and say that a good place to begin would be the level we were at before the income tax expired," the speaker said. "Starting there, you can go in whatever direction you want to go." He did not elaborate. Madigan and the Democrats, who hold supermajorities in both the House and Senate, have been in a standoff with a conservative businessman governor over the state budget, which should have taken effect July 1st. Democrats want to catch up to the deficit with a tax increase and spending cuts. Rauner counters the problems are deeper and is demanding far-reaching changes to make operating business cheaper. His plan would curb union power by crimping prevailing wage rages, I think that's a misplaced word, and collective bargaining, and limit payouts in workers' compensation and liability lawsuits. A spokeswoman for the governor did not respond to a request for comment, but the GOP leader of the Senate, Christine Radogno, of Lamont, called it outrageous to suggest higher taxes with no reforms to change the way we do business. Rauner's victory over former Democratic Governor Pat Quinn last year dashed Democrats' hope to extend the four-year 67% temporary increase imposed under Quinn. The rate went from 3% to 5%, producing $7 billion a year, but the 2011 law required it to roll back to 3.75% without action to extend it. Madigan continues to label as extreme Rauner's proposed changes and has repeatedly called for the governor to operate in moderation. Three stopgap budget plans lawmakers have been able to put together with Rauner, including one Monday, which released $3 billion, mostly in already collected tax revenue, were possible. Madigan said, because of one little difference, the governor was not demanding changes in workers' compensation, collective bargaining, or the prevailing wage. State government continues to lurch forward on the back of spending ordered by federal courts and on limited action by Rauner and lawmakers. But Madigan said losers include social service agencies, which have not received what typically is $6 billion a year from the state. Our next article was written by Chris Lusvardi, who's an H&R staff writer. Cover crops providing soil health benefits. Farmers attending a workshop Wednesday in Decatur were looking for ways to prevent excess nitrogen runoff from their fields and keep soils healthy. Speakers during the Your Soil, Your Nutrients, Your Bottom Line conference at the University of Illinois Extension Macon County office suggested cover crops are proving to be the best way to keep nitrogen in place. Some area farmers, including those who participated in a panel discussion, have embraced the use of cover crops and are trying to realize the benefits of keeping the ground in production throughout the year. We've seen yield bumps as cover crops are still evolving, said Chase Brown, who has been using cover crops since 2012 on his family's farm near Warrensburg. We're still figuring out that value. Eric Miller, who farms in southern Piatt County, said the research work he has participated in and use of cover crops since 2011 has proven beneficial. It's been a bit of a journey to get where I'm at, Miller said. We've increased the diversity of our crop rotation. It's tough to put a value on it. Reducing nitrogen loads in farm fields can help to protect watersheds such as Lake Decatur, said Dan Schaefer, director of nutrient stewardship for the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. High yields in 2014 and 2015, along with cold winters, helped to maximize soil utilization, Schaefer said. We're changing the amount of nitrogen we're putting on, Schaefer said. Cover crops are proving to be one of the best remediation techniques available, said Lowell Gentry, a University of Illinois agricultural research specialist. Research projects are testing the use of constructing wetlands, installing bioreactors, and drainage water management, Gentry said. Research has shown a 30% reduction in tile nitrate loss by using cover crops, Gentry said. Cover crops provide benefits to earthworms, doubling the time they have available to eat, and in the process improving soil quality, said Hans Koch, a conservation consultant from Indiana. That's what we need to do to get soils healthy again, Koch said. We can get more off those soils. Yields are higher than in the past, Koch said, but soil quality isn't as high as it was previously. This from Shelbyville, also written by Chris Luzvardi. Regional jobs program progresses despite stalemate. The lack of a state budget is affecting educational programs across Illinois, yet efforts continue to keep certain initiatives moving forward despite no budget agreement in sight. The No Job Left Behind initiative was praised Tuesday for what it's doing to create job training opportunities and raise awareness in parts of central Illinois, including Coles, Douglas, Moultrie, and Shelby counties. It should be copied all over the state, Pam Weber said during a meeting at the Lake Shelbyville Visitor Center. Weber is a legislative consultant from Macomb, who provided an update about the status of the budget situation in Springfield. The state is not telling you what to do, Weber said. You're looking at what's needed and doing something about it. Career and technical education programs have been in question without a state budget, as funding for Perkins grants hadn't been released, Weber said. But allocations for Perkins grants was included as part of legislation approved this week to provide appropriations for services such as 911 call centers. Perkins grants are a federal program with matching funds from the state for career and technical education programs. Being able to continue the programs can make a big difference as groups throughout the state look for ways to create jobs and build an educated workforce. Community colleges are at real risk, Weber said, as other funding remains in doubt, particularly for Monetary Award Program or MAP grants that provide financial aid to college students. Career training programs can be an important part of the educational process, Weber said. We need to look at individuals, Weber said. There is no shame in guiding a student to where they can make a good living. No Job Left Behind was developed 2 years ago and continues with nearly 150 people involved in its efforts, said Stephanie McMahon, Sullivan Chamber and Economic Development Director. It keeps growing, McMahon said. Among its efforts, the group has organized tours for high school students at local manufacturers and worked to open a dialogue between educators and business leaders, McMahon said. Weber said it is on the right track by not waiting for the state and continuing its work. She said that's the best way to determine the future. Not to suggest that snow is in the forecast or anything, but our next article was written by Justin Kahn, who is also an H&R staff writer, and carries the headline, Be Prepared for Winter Driving. With a couple of light snows already in the books and winter approaching, the Illinois Department of Transportation, or IDOT, is urging motorists to be prepared. With temperatures dropping and some of the state already experiencing a first blast of winter, drivers should be aware of what they can do to keep safety their number one priority. Illinois Transportation Secretary Randy Blankenhorn said, That means buckling up, slowing down, increasing travel distances, and preparing to stay home if the weather is bad. Some of IDOT's tips for its Winter Weather Get It Together campaign are everyday rules drivers should follow any time of the year. Wear a seatbelt, don't use handheld devices, drive slow, carry a cell phone and car charger, and follow Scott's Law. Slow down and move over for stopped emergency, construction, and maintenance vehicles. Others are specific to winter. Don't crowd the plow. Don't use cruise control in snow or ice. Watch out for black ice. Be careful approaching intersections, ramps, bridges, and shady areas. And don't drive in snow or ice unless absolutely necessary. Some tips take some advanced planning, like preparing an emergency car care kit and winter car maintenance. Casey Reed, a mechanic at Rags Complete Auto Repair in Decatur, said today's cars are designed more as all-weather vehicles than cars in the past, but there are still a couple of things to be aware of. It used to be you had to switch out water for antifreeze in the winter, but vehicles are now designed to run antifreeze year-round, Reed said. But one thing you should keep your eye on is tire pressure. When the temperature goes down, so can the tire pressure, so make sure to keep that up. Alignment and front end problems can also be a bigger problem in the winter than the summer, because any steering problem, is going to be compounded by bad weather. At any time, motorists can check travel conditions by calling 1-800-452-IDOT, or that's when the IDOT is 4368, or visiting gettingaroundillinois.com and clicking on the winter road conditions icon. Illinois tollway information is available at 1-800-452-IDOT. Toll FYI. IDOT is also on Facebook and Twitter. They also have a little information box here on things to put in an emergency car care kit are jumper cables, flares or reflectors, windshield washer fluid, ice scraper, traction material like kitty litter, blankets, non-perishable food, and a first aid kit. They don't mention a blanket or something to keep you warm if you're stuck for a while, but I've always heard to put that in there too. We're going to turn real fast to Mary Hunt and the Everyday Cheapskate, see if we can learn some money-saving tips. And the headline is, Give Washing Machine a Break. As wonderful as a washing machine is when it comes to saving time and effort, it can also be a troublesome member of the household. Washing machines are responsible for more than $150 million of damage in homes across the U.S. every year. Imagine a river flowing from your laundry room with hundreds of gallons of water per hour pouring over thresholds and flooding, soaking your furniture and prized collectibles. It happens. Washing machine hoses score number one in the lineup of the most neglected maintenance items in a home. Last year, State Farm alone paid more than 7,500 water damage claims from broken washing machine hoses. These claims range from a few hundred dollars to more than $100,000. There are steps you can and should take routinely to make sure this does not happen to you. If you have a washing machine, you need to check the water inlet hoses at least once a year. Not checking them is like not checking the oil in your car. Nothing seems to be amiss until your life flashes in front of you as you see your sofa floating down the front walkway. Okay, back to the hoses. There are two of them, and they connect the machine to the cold and hot water faucets. You cannot tell by simply looking at those hoses if they need to be replaced. Age, chemicals in the water, and buildup of calcium deposits over time can degrade rubber. And to complicate matters further, even a new hose could be old, having lived a good deal of its life in a warehouse. You can't tell by simply looking. However, if you do see a small blister in the rubber of the hose, assume that is a disaster just waiting to happen. If the rubber feels brittle or shows any signs of cracking, replace it immediately. If you cannot remember replacing your water inlet hoses, put that on your list for next weekend, then do it again in 3 years. Most manufacturers and all insurance companies recommend replacing the hoses every 3 to 5 years. You cannot be too cautious on this. There are two types of hoses available: rubber hoses for about $5 each, or braided stainless steel hoses for about $15 each. While stainless steel hoses with twisted flexible mesh of stainless steel wire appear to have the edge when it comes to performance, they are not foolproof. The connectors can break loose and the rubber interior of the metal hose can deteriorate. Installing new hoses is not at all difficult. It's like attaching a garden hose. But beware, installation error is the biggest cause for premature hose failure. Sharp kinks or bends in the hose can weaken the hose itself or the seal at the connector. To prevent this, you need to allow 3 to 4 inches between the back of the washing machine and the wall. If you have a tight installation, such as an old shallow laundry closet, there are hoses available that have right angle connectors, allowing the machine to be placed closer to the wall. You may have to special order this unusual item. Okay, that's our quick note, and boy, I learned something there. I'm going to go home and check my washing machine right now. This has been Ruth McCauley reading news from the Decatur area for Thursday, December 10th. As always, I find it pleasurable, and I hope you did too. I look forward to reading with you again real soon, and until that time, y'all take care.